T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
You're going to get your first opportunity in Chicago to hear from seventh round draftee Lachavius Simmons. His nickname is Pig. He's the seventh rounder out of Tennessee State. Pig Simmons will join the crew for Bears All Access at 6 o'clock.
Coming up at about 6:10, joined by one of the Bears rookie members of the 2020 draft class, seventh rounder Lachavius Pig Simmons.
Pig.
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 Pig. Pig.
I got to be honest with you, Mac. I did not know that Lachavius was Pig.
You know, I referred to you as Pig, and I don't want people to think, okay, where'd this come from? And your story's been told a little bit once you've been drafted. But, you know, you grew up on a farm, man, throwing bales of hay. And that's part of it, right? Is that part of the nickname and what your family decided to refer to you as?
And I never used a fork, and I used to just pig out on it. And that's how I got it. And so they just called me Pig. And it just stuck me ever since I was a baby.
We can't call him Pig Simmons when you got a cool first name like Lachavius.
Yeah. I don't care how you cut it. You can't put silk pants on a pig.
When you look at that in terms of your eating habits, obviously you're over 300, so it's still continued, I would assume, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can't use the nickname yet until we get to know your first name first.
I walked into the room and there he was.
A pig man.
A pig man. Half pig, half man.
Yo! Saddle up, lock and load.
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
That's exactly how we light the fuse to a three-day weekend on the McNeil and Parkin Show on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Glad you're here with us today. That was just delightful. So many layers to it, as always, with Tanny, the surgeon of sound. Mark Grody sitting in for Danny Parkins with me again today. Oh. I'd never heard that Doug Buffone soundbite before, putting silk pants on a pig. That's outstanding, man. How did we not have that one in our recent malaprop extended play? That is fabulous.
Well, for days like today, when, you know, there's new stuff that you haven't heard before.
My God, they throw the malaprop. What a shock. Guys who open microphones and talk about sports for a living would butcher cliches and make up their own language along the way.
You can't put silk pants on a pig.
Ah, Doggy, I miss you so much, but it's so good that we have Doug on audio. Just press play and the magic comes out. And Grody, thank you for the reminder. As soon as we got done last night, I went to pick up Patrick, my son, who lives about 15 minutes away, and the Sirius XM was on. And so I'm rocking, and I see a text from you saying something about Tom Thayer's question to the pig. So I popped over to enjoy the duration of the interview with Pig, and I like him. I like me some Lachavius.
Awesome,
wasn't he fun?
Oh, yeah. He is terrific. He's a bloody-your-nose type of offensive lineman, man. And hearing them sort of qualify the nickname Pig and being careful with it, because obviously, normally when we call somebody a pig, it has such a negative connotation. So they all had to explain themselves. Now, just so we know, we're calling you a pig because that's what you like to be called. We don't think you're really a pig. And then I heard Thayer in his first question say something like, in his introduction to him, he's like, yeah, I'm Tom Thayer. It's good to talk to you, pig. Or I'm not really sure if I'm supposed to call you that or what the deal is. So.
Yeah, that's good. I hope this kid makes the team just because he seems like a lot of fun. And they can't be, he can't be that much worse than anybody else at tackle, can he? I mean, really, when you get down to it, can you train the pig to be replacement level for Charles Leno? Please. We got to get that pig out on the edge.
Get the pig.
So Cohen doesn't get caught when they run sweep to the short side of the field. Come on, 72. Move your feet. Get outside. Get outside. Hey, no, he can't.
Is that an unprecedented nickname? Has there ever been a pig in your life? I mean, there was the Hogs of the Washington Redskins in the 80s, but they weren't pigs. Yeah. Those were Hogs. I don't think there's ever been a pig or pigs in team sports that I know of. Have you ever had a friend nicknamed Pig?
I don't. No, I don't know of a. I had a guy on my team whose last name was Pig in baseball.
What's up, Pig?
Jim Pig, hard throwing right hander. he's like 6'8 when he was 12. And he loves prog rock too. So he's a good man all around, the Pigster. No, I've never heard of Pig as a name. I'm sure it's been used. This can't be the first time. I mean, the Bears had a fullback named Suey, but that's not what we're looking for. Harry Tynowitz has joined us for the first half hour of the show. Oh, God, that is really good. But he talked about his training regimen, which include. It sounds like a Rocky Balboa, dragging the big old tractor tires tied around your waist down on the farm, and his dad has built him a weight room down there. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Oh, he embraced it too. Like sometimes when you talk to those guys, oh yeah, I did this and I, but he's like, this is what he still does. This is the way he works out. He embraces being a farm boy and he embraces being the pig and being a bloody your nose type of offensive lineman, bruh. Yeah. I hope just for the, sometimes we do that in sports. Sometimes you want a guy to succeed just because of the personality, and he would early on. He certainly qualifies for a guy that one can root for. Lechavius Pig Simmons out of Tennessee State, ladies and gentlemen.
You did it the
way
Richard
Dent went.
Yes, it was where Richard Dent went. It worked out okay for him here. Seventh rounder also back in 1983, if I recall correctly. Yes, sir. There's so much I'm excited about doing today. So much I'm excited about doing today with you, Grody. It's a holiday weekend, and I want to keep it nice and light today, if that's cool with you, cool with everybody, because we're a quartet here. A quintet, actually. Herb Lawrence is also back at the shop. He doesn't open his mic very much, but
Herbie's got the day off today, actually.
Oh, Herbie's off?
Yeah.
Okay.
Give Herbie a little breather. We got Jordan Malley here with us today.
Jordan Malley is in the house. He doesn't get a vote. He hasn't busted a grape yet on the show, has he?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, no. Jordan will get to meet you in a little bit as well. But we're going to talk about war films during the 4 o'clock hour. Tribune film critic Michael Phillips, who's a really, I think he's a terrific writer, and I've always enjoyed having him on my shows whenever Spiegel and I talk to him or when I did the thing on The Drive for a little while, and Danny and I have had him on. And he's a terrific film fan. And we're going to talk about the great war pictures. It is a genre in film that is not going away. In fact, it seems like recent years, the industry has continued to put out really high-quality war pictures. And I don't know if you saw this past year's Oscar nominee. I thought it was going to win, Grody. Was it 1917 or 1912? Help me.
It was 1917.
Okay.
Whatever it takes. 1912,
yeah, 13. 12.
Look, it was around
the
there, okay?
Yeah, and I thought it was really, really well done, but I didn't find any of the characters to be... I didn't really care about them until the very, very end. That's what kind of sullied it for me. They didn't really develop the characters the way other great war pictures do, like Platoon did in the 80s, directed by Oliver Stone. Memorial Day weekend, not to get too heavy, but want to say thanks to everybody who served, anybody who's a member of a family where somebody has served or is serving. Thank you so much. Not my favorite genre of films, Grody, but it's growing on me because, you know, Hollywood is continuing to put out comic book film after comic book film after comic book film, and the television industry is kicking the movie industry's ass and has been for, what, 10 years now or so, maybe longer? I don't know. What would you say the line of demarcation was when television shifted the balance of power? Was it Sopranos?
Honestly, I think it was Breaking Bad. I think Sopranos was a precursor to it, but that was still, you know, that wasn't really a bingeable show when it came out. We didn't have the technology to do that. I think the binge era might have really got its best boost from Breaking Bad and then Mad Men and Game of Thrones alike. But I would go Breaking Bad on that one. I don't know if Tanny agrees or not, because I know he's the big Sopranos fan on the show.
I would agree.
But I felt like,
Sopranos was like appointment television for anyone that had HBO, and HBO had a lot of eyes on it, certainly to this day. But back then, Breaking Bad being on AMC did not have as many eyes on it. So like you said, a lot of people did catch up to Breaking Bad after the fact, binging it. That's how I got into it. So, yeah, I would say I'll give you that. Yeah, that's good, Mark. Good job.
Thank you.
Affirmation. How do you feel about that, Grody?
Oh, I am going to blast off for the rest of this show, man. That's all I needed, man, with just a little bit of Tanny love. But here's the thing about the war movies, Mac, is that what they are focusing on now that I love is the realism and the cinematography that we saw in 1917, where they put you right down in there. And I agree with you. Like, there's nothing I can quote from that movie or remember from that movie other than being put right down on the ground with those guys by whomever was the cinematographer and director for that movie. Same deal.
Sam Mendes, who also did American Beauty,
Okay, well, credit to him. And then Saving Private Ryan, Steven Spielberg, same thing. Like, that invasion of Normandy scene, Normandy right at the very beginning, the graphic nature. I mean, there's a fear factor. Like, you could feel the fear. You could feel the death, the sounds of the guns. Like, it's terrible. Like, you got to be ready to watch that when it comes out. And so I appreciate the realism. I don't need characters. Like Platoon seemed to have a little bit more character to it. But I guess I fall in line. If I'm going to watch a war movie, I want the realism. And that's what those two, at least 1917 and Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah, Spielberg crushed it with Saving Private Ryan. There were so many people by conclusion you had developed a fondness for, right? I mean, not just Tom Hanks's character, but there were so many others. Paul Giamatti had a piece of it. I thought Barry Pepper as the marksman was spectacular, kissing his cross before he executed the enemy. Adam Goldberg had a part of it. Who's the real good-looking guy with Brooklyn on the back of his army jacket? That guy was spectacular, too. He almost went against the crew near the end of the film. Why am I not pulling his name? Matt Damon was later, but Tom Sizemore. Yeah, just so many great, great characters that you cared about them all. And then they're getting popped, you know, and it's ugly, man. My wife and I just started Band of Brothers, finally. I know I'm late to the party on that one, but we're four episodes in, and I've been enjoying the hell out of it. So, war movies with Michael Phillips. Now, coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes, we're going to check in with Jeff Hornacek. Yes, indeedy do. The Lions Township graduate, NBA head coach in recent memory, and a guy who has his jersey number 14 retired by the Utah Jazz, is going to check in and eulogize his former coach, Jerry Sloan. And Jerry Sloan is being reported in his bio primarily as a Utah Jazz. But for those of us old farts who went to the Chicago Stadium in the 1970s, he was a big part of the first important Bulls team in franchise history. You remember now, that was an organization born in 66-67 in a city with only college basketball history attached to it. Loyola had just won the national championship a few years prior. So the Bulls had a long climb to get people to pay attention to them. And I remember with so much fondness that 74-75 Bulls team with a great backcourt of Norm Van Leer and Jerry Sloan, and the Bulls ultimately retired Sloan's jersey number 4. He was a tough SOB. Where he grew up downstate reminds me, and I've not been to that part of it, but just thinking about it, and I've seen stories about Jerry's upbringing for, it's been many years, but it is so reminiscent of all of the scenery you see when you watch Hoosiers. That's how he grew up, in a take-no-quarter, give-no-quarter era where you had to work for everything you got. And he took that attitude into his playing career. He was a ferocious defender, didn't go to a big school, went to the University of Evansville, but was a terrific defender, a good all-around player. And for those of us who remember 74-75, it's like to me, Mark, what you guys have been experiencing, Danny and Tanny and Shep, a little bit younger than you are, this look at the Last Dance Bulls, that's the sweet spot of your early teens for a lot of guys on our staff. That's the sweet spot of me still being so madly in love with anything and everything to do with sports in the city of Chicago. And that team just captured our imaginations. They got knocked out by Golden State, the eventual champion of the NBA, but a lot of Bulls fans with heavy hearts today. And I've enjoyed social media exchanges with some of the old timers, like my former partner, Terry Bors, and Mark Potash and Mike North. It's been fun to reflect with them, but Jeff Hornacek is going to join us in a little bit. Sorry about the dissertation there.
No, you're the only one who actually really, I was born in 72, so I wasn't, like, as I like to say, I wasn't really sports conscious at that time, so I don't remember a thing that Jerry Sloan nor Norm Van Leer did on the court. So it's interesting to go back and look, and I'm always reminded about how young this Bulls franchise actually is, as he was selected, was Jerry Sloan, 1966 expansion draft. That's how little history there really is with the Chicago Bulls compared to all of our other teams in town. As you said, great defensive player, 4-time all-defensive NBA first team. And then the coaching tree is kind of interesting, too, with Jerry Sloan, I thought, in going back and looking. Because obviously he's known for his 18 years, or 23 years, I should say, in Utah, which is amazing in itself to have lasted that long. But he did coach the Bulls. And he beat the Knicks in a playoff series and then lost to the 1981 Celtics, the first of the Larry Bird title teams. And then maybe even more interesting, in 81, he was replaced by Paul Westhead, who was pushed out of Los Angeles by Magic Johnson, that diva. And then Westhead would eventually go on to Loyola Marymount, and they had that spasm of great success. And, of course, the tragic death of Hank Gathers, who was at Bo Kimball, I think, was another one of the players on that team. So, yeah, there's some interesting dots to connect when you talk about Jerry Sloan, which makes sense being, you know, considering how long the guy was a part of the NBA.
You guys will find it hard to believe, but it's the truth. The Blackhawks were then to the Bulls what the Bulls had become to the Blackhawks in the 90s. And maybe even then some. There was so much disparity. Pat Williams, former boss of the Orlando Magic, used to be the Bulls PR guy. He would be outside the stadium in the cold, just passing out free tickets to try to get some people inside so they could experience the product. And it wasn't real good right away. I don't remember their first few years. I remember them right around 72, 73, when they were starting to get cranked up for that. And, just a tremendous part of Chicago sports history. Never got to know Jerry, unfortunately. North and Jiggets had him on their show a few times in 97 and 98 when the Bulls and Jazz met in the finals, and he was really, really a willing participant. He had mellowed a little bit, but still, I mean, we saw during the Last Dance some of the clips from his news conferences. He could go red ass on you in a hurry. He was Norman Dale in many ways, although he played the game professionally for a long time as well.
Is there anybody who... who has looked more like his personality, too. Jerry Sloan looked no nonsense. From the way his hair was combed to his resting face to the way he talked to the few words that he used, it just, like, he looked the part completely of this four-time all-defensive stalwart.
Yeah, I think he has facially, he resembles to a little bit a Doug Buffone. I think he's a more slender-faced Doug Buffone.
Okay.
Yeah. Find me the other love child, and I'll send you a block of very expensive cheese.
I saw you posted something about cheese on, was it Facebook today or Twitter?
It was Twitter today, yeah. It might have been both, but I think it was only on Twitter. Yeah, I looked at a $180 block of cheese today for our reunion whenever we have one. I passed on it, though, because it could be months before we all get together. I'll grab that 15-year Hook's cheddar. I love that stuff. I'm treating myself this weekend. I don't know about you. I've got some jumbo bone-in ribeyes. Shane Reardon and I have been exchanging thoughts on how to make magic out of those things over the weekend because I learned from him. Never stop learning. And I don't when it comes to cooking. There's so much I have to learn. And I watched him out at Scorehouse in Arizona, and somebody made a comment. I don't remember who it was. Probably it was one of the guys on the digital team. How much salt are you going to put on this? Shane, you know, Shane.
Oh, yeah.
I'm cooking tonight. Take a walk. You know, he's just, get out of here. And I thought he was a little bit liberal with it as well. And, oh, my God. Yeah, you got to get him to room, and you got to salt him and salt. It makes for a much better searing. I'm going to try to get the green egg up to 700 degrees for my sizzle fest. You ever had a grill up to 700, Grody?
I have not. I do not, in my present life, I do not own a grill. But I'm planning out a big cheat night tonight as well. We're going heavy hamburger, like the full-fat burgers with sweet Hawaiian buns to go with it. And then I have bought, this is something that I don't usually do. I don't usually make dessert. I went ahead and just bought a classic box of Betty Crocker milk chocolate brownie mix. So, you know, I'm gonna go to town on that tonight. It feels like a cheat night.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good for you. You've earned it. You've been a good boy. This is WSCR and HD Chicago, the Score Sports Radio 670. Mac with Grody in for Parkins today. We're going to talk in a little bit with Jeff Hornacek. And then at 3 o'clock, if you're a Score listener from the mid to late 90s, this is going to be a treat for you. And even if you weren't with us back then, stick around, because I think one of the most entertaining Bears in franchise history was Joe Kane, a free agent linebacker Wani signed off Seattle's roster. He became a fast friend of the radio station, and I've not talked to Joe in probably 20 years. I am so excited to get on the hookup with him today and just see. He's out in Seattle. Went to school out in the Pac Northwest, and that's always where he was most comfortable. We've been friends on Facebook for quite some time. And I said, you know what? Score stories time. Let's get Joe Kane on to tell a Wani story or two. Wani celebrated a birthday yesterday, so we got to roast him a little bit. And I'm looking forward to talking to Joe. You ever meet Joe?
No, I haven't. But Joe Kane, Mac, was on maybe my favorite Bears team of all time, and that was the 1994 Chicago Bears that won a wild card game at Minnesota 35-18. So I've been waiting 25 years to tell Joe Kane, nice game. Good job. You and Barry Mitchell were strong.
Yes, 59-92. Yeah. That's awesome.
Right, and then there was that whole loss to San Francisco at Candlestick Park where they lost by like 40 or something like that.
Oh, goodness, the fullback William Floyd out of Florida State put Alonzo Spellman, I think he buried him 2 feet into the Candlestick Park turf in the end zone.
He pegged him.
He did. It was a complete pigging. Lechavius Pig Simmons is coming to make Juan Castillo look like the great Howard Mudd. For years we thought we could.
Forget pancaking. It's pigging now.
All right, hang tight. Jeff Hornacek is right around the corner. Grody's in for Parkins. I'm Mac, and you're listening to The Score.
Behind a Rodman screen, Russell fights it off. Jordan forces the shot and misses it. Utah can tie it. It's Stockton. Hornacek for three. Utah has the lead.
Here's Michael Jordan right. right here. So they're 5-on-4. Michael cannot get back into the play. Stockton realizes it. He pushes it up the floor. Hornacek trails in from behind. And Hornacek with the big three that gives his team a one-point lead.
Hornacek at age 35, aching Achilles and all. 20 points, 15 of them in the second half.
There are many things in life more important than basketball. But meeting my wife Tammy and my stepson Red has allowed me to continue on with my career in basketball when I question my strength to do so. And thank all of you for being here this evening and congratulations my fellow inductees. I could not be prouder. It's truly an honor to be such among such a well-respected and talented group of individuals. Thank you all very much.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
That the voice of now the late former Chicago Bull and head coach of the Utah Jazz, Jerry Sloan, who passed away today at the age of 78. It is our pleasure right now to have the company of a local guy made good, a member of that Utah Jazz team that went toe-to-toe with the Bulls back in 97 and 98. Jeff Hornacek, good old number 14, is joining us right now on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Hello, Jeff. Thanks for your time. How are you feeling today, man?
Well, you know, it's a sad day. Coach has been sick, and, you know, we knew maybe this day would come at some point, but when it does come, it's sad, sad day where, you know, you're hurting, but you also can look back at all the great memories he provided for all of us. And he was just a special guy.
He had been suffering for some time. I had wanted him for a show a few years back to talk about Norm Van Leer on the anniversary of his passing. And I was told Jerry had been suffering from both Parkinson's and dementia. So, you know, the old cliche, sometimes it feels hollow when you hurt, but maybe he's in a better place. What was it about Jerry who made you a better basketball player? And to follow that up, Horny, what did you take with you in your coaching career that you got from Jerry Sloan?
Yeah, I think, you know, I grew up in Chicago watching Jerry play on those teams with Van Leer and Bob Love and those guys and Chet Walker. And I always remember how hard he played. And then I got in the league and played against the Jazz. You know, back then, right in the beginning, there was only 23 teams, so you played everybody six times. It seems like we played them in the first round of the playoffs every single year when I was with Phoenix. So, you know, that was one of the things that I always saw him on the sidelines, how intense he was, how he played, how he was coaching. And then when I got traded there, I'm like, oh, man, am I going to be, you know, I'm not, I got to play defense now, you know, so. But what Coach Sloan did was, you know, he gave me the confidence to go out there. You know, he had a system, but he trusted the players to kind of make their little reads off of that. And, you know, he could get on you in a game. But then as soon as the game was over, you know, he was one of those coaches that you could go have a beer with afterwards and, you know, kind of talk about things. And he was just a great guy to be around, funny. You know, probably people don't see all the intensity that he had, but, you know, when the game was over, the game was over. You know, he didn't let it linger around. And, you know, that's what we admired and respected. And he just pushed us to be the best possible players we could be.
Jeff, let me build on that intensity with a follow-up. Jerry Sloan appeared to have had a fearlessness about him, whether it was as a player in the highlights that I've seen or as a coach that I did get to witness. And I always felt that you and Stockton and the rest of the Jazz players under him that played the Bulls in the finals in those 2 years, that nobody was really psyched out by the Jordan mystique. There wasn't the same fear factor with your team like it appeared to be with other teams and players. Is that a proper assessment? And if so, did that come from Sloan, that mentality?
Well, I think the mentality did. I think a lot of us were a lot older at that point. So, you know, we had played against Michael and played against him in the finals in 97. So, I mean, we were experienced players where that really didn't come into play at all. You know, we knew we were going to battle him. We knew it was going to be a battle. But, you know, the thing with Jerry was, hey, you know, just go out there and if you hit him, you hit him. You know, it was one of those Yeah, I think we all kind of played that way. And Jerry, you know, you were afraid not to play that way under Jerry because that's what he demanded. That's how he played. And, you know, I took it in when I was coaching. I was talking earlier to somebody about, I think it was Carmel. I probably should look it up. But there was an article when I was coaching the Knicks. And I think it was him that said, oh, yeah, Jeff's a laid-back coach. Except for when he pulls out his Jerry Sloan, he goes, but that was great because it got everybody's attention. And that's kind of how Jerry was, you know, and when you're a coach, you take everything from a bunch of your coaches. And of course, that intensity, and that kind of, you can get on guys at times, yet at other times, you know, you can go hang out and talk with them and be friendly with them and, have that kind of relationship. So, he taught me a lot as a player and, you know, led into my coaching.
Jeff Hornacek is with us on the Score Sports Radio 670 McNeil with Parkins. And, Jeff, I was trying to explain to the younger guys just what that 74-75 Bulls team meant to this city. It was the first one that really mattered. Tickets were free. It wasn't hard to get a ticket to a Bulls game until that Jerry and Norm and Love and Walker, the guys you mentioned, when was your first experience going to a Bulls game? Put a log on the fire and regale Bulls fans with young Jeff Hornacek watching some of his heroes when he was a kid.
Well, you know, you'd watch games. I didn't go to a ton of Bulls games. We didn't have the ability to necessarily go to the games. I went to more White Sox games growing up, probably than anything. But, you know, I think they used to have this pass, dribble, and shoot contest. That was, you know, kind of like the punt, pass, and kick for football, and they had one in basketball, and I advanced to Bulls Stadium, and that's, I remember that game because I was standing right in front of Bob Love taking a picture at the, you know, at the intermission, and, you know, it was, that was kind of the start of, you know, for me, my dad was a coach, and, you know, I had Gene Pingitore, which my dad was always around and coached with, and those influences, but to see the professional guys out there, and then to watch them go, man, those guys really go at it. And, you know, that's the thing that I always took from Jerry playing, watching him when I was growing up. It, just play tough, you know, play hard-nosed basketball and lay it all out there. And, you know, even though we lost to the Bulls the two times, we felt we laid it out there the best we could, and that's all that Jerry ever asked.
It's amazing. I mean, you look at his coaching after playing, and it's almost comical, Jeff, to imagine a guy in this day and age coaching for 23 years in one place, other than the winning, and that was obvious. He did a lot of winning with the Jazz. How do you think he lasted for 23 years? How did he not wear on his players like it seems other coaches around the league do and have done?
Well, you know, I think that was just Jerry. He was going to coach it his way, and, you know, you either followed up and give a lot of credit to the Utah Jazz organization of, you know, they brought players in. If they weren't going to, you know, play like Jerry wanted them to, you know, they changed up and got different players. And, you know, and obviously you had John and Carl there were two, you know, ultimate competitors. Those guys, I tell people now, I said, in all the years we had scrimmages, I think I can only remember losing one scrimmage in the 6.5 years I was there. And the scrimmage we lost, the second team ran around celebrating like they won the world championship because they never won. And so, you know, you have that combination of Jerry, John, and Carl. Guys just followed in that path. They weren't going to stray from that. And you know, Jerry set the tone.
How much did it mean to you when the Jazz retired your jersey 14?
Yeah, no, that was big. You know, when I retired, you know, probably could have played maybe a year or two, but my knee was getting bad, and I didn't want to start playing 15, 20 minutes a game. At that point, I didn't think we were going to win a championship. So I said, well, let's spend time with my family. And, you know, that's one thing, you know, to go back, it was special that Larry Miller said, I want to retire your number. It was a great feeling. But a lot of credit, you know, from my days in Utah, it goes to Jerry in terms of with my knee. He had a bad knee, and he understood that, hey, there's some games where I'm just not going to, I'm not going to have it. And he'll play me less. There'll be a practice that we're going hard. And he'll say, hey, just, you know, go to the side and don't practice. And as I got, you know, those later years, I think I was in the finals, I was 35, that Jerry understood what it was to have a bad knee. And, you know, training camp, it was like, instead of 2-a-days, okay, just practice once. And then, you know, if you need to sit out, sit out, you know. So he was very in tune with his players and how they felt. And, you know, he probably kept my career going even longer because he was a coach that allowed me to, you know, sit out when I needed to.
Jeff, I got to ask you the question that, you know, is pretty much required to be asked these days, and that is, did you watch The Last Dance? And if so, what did you think watching the Utah portion of it? Did it make you smile, or did it bring back angst because you didn't quite get there over Jordan?
Good thing many years have gone by since those days. But, yeah, it still gets you. You know, the biggest thing, we watched it, you know, watch it as a family, and it was good. My kids were really, you know, pretty young, so they didn't really understand it and see it. So it was fun to go through and they get an idea. And I think it's good for young players now to see what Michael's determination and how he went about it and never wanted to lose. And, you know, even when he was hurt and sore, he still got out there and played. And, you know, it brings back some thoughts to me, though. I always felt that in 97, the first year we played the Bulls, they were the better team. The second year, I thought we were on a pretty good roll from the All-Star break on. You know, they had a tough series against Indiana. But we had a 10-day layoff before we played. And, you know, it helped some of the bumps and bruises a little bit. But I felt like we got back to playing about, you know, 95, 96% of how we were playing prior to that. And that's just not good enough to beat Michael and that team. So, you know, it was a great battle. We had our chances. You know, they made the plays and we did it.
Do you believe it was bad pizza that led to Jordan's flu?
I don't know. Who knows? You know, I had heard that before. You know, who knows what it was, but all I know is that whatever it wasn't bad enough food poisoning because he still put up what he put up. So.
Do you believe Jerry Sloan had no idea? Because that was in the documentary. He said, I had no damn idea that this guy had food poisoning. No, I was the last one to know.
Yeah, he probably didn't. You know, he always said, and he told us, said, you know, if you step out on the court, I'm assuming there's nothing wrong with you. You know, so don't get out there and say I'm hurt or I had a bad game because I'm sick or whatever it was. You know, so Jerry probably saw him out there and said, he's fine.
Hey, Jeff, really great to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time today. I want to ask you this in conclusion. About a dozen years or so ago, you had a meeting with John Paxson about a coaching position on the Bulls staff. What came between you and the Bulls ever getting married professionally?
Well, I wasn't ready for coaching at that point. I was, you know, it came up and I said, sure. And, you know, talked about kind of the philosophies, but, you know, that it definitely wasn't the right time for me to get into it. You know, I think just timing issue was, a big part of it. And, you know, the Bulls, again, when you grow up in Chicago, that's always a thought going, you know, if there was some day that I can get on a staff or there in Chicago, that'd be great. But I think the timing was bad. I met with John Paxson. You know, we had a good talk. But, again, I think he probably saw that he's not ready to coach. I need a little experience.
Jeff, great to catch up with you this afternoon. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend. We appreciate it.
Hi, you guys too. Take care.
Bye-bye. Thanks, man. That's Jeff Hornacek, Horny, from Lions Township High School, Iowa State, longtime NBA player, a two-guard, a former NBA coach who had flirtations with the Bulls a dozen years ago. But there would be no union between the Western Suburbanite and his hometown squad. That was fun. You know what? 230 is officially designated right now on this show as white guy two guards from NBA of the 90s, man.
I love it, man. And, you know, you could tell that Jeff and I had a little connection, and the reason why is because we were both born where? In Elmhurst, Illinois. So, yeah, we totally had the Elmhurst connection going there, and you calling him horny almost derailed me in laughter for that entire
Why? Why?
Does he really go by Horny?
I think his mom probably called him Horny most. I don't know. Yes, he goes by Horny.
Does he?
Of course he does. What would you Hornsey? Call a guy named Hornacek?
Hornsey, maybe. Hornsey, but Horny?
No, they call him Horny.
Do they?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Well, they do now. He didn't seem put off, but no, I've heard him referred to as Horny for many years, Grody.
Really?
Yes. Okay. Should I have called him Pig? We can't call him Pig. Lechavius has exclusivity.
That would have really derailed me. What's
hey,
up, Pig? What's up,
how much time did you spend in Elmhurst, by the way, after being born there?
I was there for the first 3 years of my life, and then
that's it?
The parents packed up and moved to Itasca.
So. Well, then you can't help me, because that exchange out that way is one of the most confusing expressway systems in all of suburban Chicagoland.
What, like 83 and whatnot?
Yes, it is a nightmare. Even with the modern technology, even the conveniences we have now, I get all twisted up out that way.
83.
Yeah, there it is. All right, we're going to take a timeout. We'll come back. And set up what we're going to do at 3 o'clock. We got to audition here. We got to practice. I don't want to mess it up when former Bears linebacker Joe Kane joins us live. Grody is in for Parkins. I'm Mac. It's the Score Sports Radio 670.
Today's our normal Friday, so it's supposed to be feel-good, fast Friday. And
it is indeed a feel-good, fast Friday on the McNeil and Parkins Show. Mark Grody is sitting in for Parkins today. Danny will be back to work Tuesday. We have a long weekend, and we're looking forward to conversation in just a little bit with former Bears linebacker Joe Kane. And I don't want, if we would be in normal circumstances, if we were in precedented times and we were in the studio, we would have done this in production and wouldn't have to audition it, practice it on the air, Grody. But I think we need to give this a try so we hit it when we have him on the phone and don't sound like a bunch of amateurs, all right? Let's sound like amateurs now for everybody else and professionals when we have Joe on the show. Good?
Sounds good, Dan.
Okay.
You I don't ready? Know what we're doing. I don't know what we're doing, but okay.
All right, here we go. Sing with me when it's our turn. Fire it up, okay. Danny.
She don't lie, she don't lie.
Cocaine. I think we need to do it again.
Wrong.
Let's try it one more time. We can nail it. It's easy. Come on, just a short pause and then cocaine. All right, here we go.
Okay. She don't lie, she don't lie, she don't lie.
Cocaine. He's a tick behind me. Am I too quick or is he too far behind me, Tanny? What's going on here?
No, I don't know. We should do it again and find out for sure.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty in sync. How about if I just do it myself once to see if I am getting it right? How about that?
Okay, go ahead. All right, go ahead.
She don't lie, she don't lie, she don't lie.
Cocaine.
You're just a little behind.
Really?
You're a beat behind me. Yes, you're one beat off, Mark.
You think Joe Kane will notice?
I do, yes. Joe Kane or cocaine? Cocaine, not my drug of choice. Why I got put in the score house up in North Lake County a few years ago. But a little bit later on, I want to share something with you that I'm not looking forward to this weekend. Grody, that's all I want to say about it for now, but it's something that you can relate to, and I'm sure it's something on a holiday weekend. A lot of people who've been through some of the miles we've been through can relate to. So we'll tuck that in on a feel-good fast Friday a little bit later on. But stick around, because former Bears linebacker Joe Kane, who played with the Bears between 93 and 97, is going to jump on with us in just a few minutes on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.